Hey gang, welcome to Tales from the Can. We pre-recorded this episode a couple weeks ago, maybe months, I don't know, some time ago, in order to have something in case life got in the way of our recording schedule, so we wouldn't miss a week. So if we reference something that's a little bit outdated, you'll need to forgive us. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun. Gotta give him the credit, he's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes. Let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2020 film Becky.
Yeah, we are.
Directed by Jonathan Milott and Carrie Mernion.
Never heard of them.
I'm guessing those two gentlemen are Canadian, maybe. So you had never seen this movie before?
Never seen it. Had no idea what it was about. In fact, I believe I had it confused with Mandy. Because I was expecting Nicolas Cage to be in this movie.
A much different movie.
Yes. I had no idea what to expect when I was watching this.
Oh, sweet. And it's a movie, unexpectedly, because I had never seen this either. But this is also a very good movie for the owner of a lake house.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta, those girls better start building the fort.
Yeah. Especially a lake house in rural Alaska.
Well, still. Anyway. So, what'd you think? Becky, 2020.
This is a weird movie, man.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I couldn't tell if it was a horror movie or a comedy. There was a couple times when it was really gory, but the gore made me laugh out loud.
Yes.
But overall, when it was over, I think I had a good time.
Yeah.
I was still processing this movie for a while.
Well, that's the thing, is like I wasn't sure what I was getting into either. I know it was a dark role for one Kevin James.
Yes.
Which actually worked really well. More in the beginning. I guess the less Kevin James talks, the more menacing he is.
Yes.
But yeah, I hadn't seen this movie. And I thought, hey, let's just do it. Because it turns out I was right. But I had a hunch that Jason would not like this movie. And in the first 15 minutes, it was pretty sure that Jason would not like this movie.
I don't know how Jason feels about Joel McHale, but if you are the type of person who is really annoyed by like Joel McHale's whole shtick, then you're probably going to dig this movie.
Sure. But if you're if you like feel tempted to go to the website doesthedogdie.com, which does exist.
Yes.
Yeah, this movie, trigger warning, a dog dies. So
one dog gets shot, another dog gets punched into unconsciousness.
Yes, yes. By the way, we will be spoiling this movie. This movie doesn't have a ton of plot. So
very little.
Yeah, in fact, it's funny. This might be just a freewheeling episode where we talk a couple minutes about the movie. Although I am going to gush. But let's start from the very beginning. This movie was originally cast Lulu Wilson as Becky, and she still is the character. She's the actress, and she is amazing.
She's really good.
Yeah, I liked her performance a lot. But the Kevin James role was supposed to be Simon Pegg.
Oh.
He had a scheduling conflict. And it's funny because I don't know. I mean, I think Simon Pegg would do fine as a neo-Nazi criminal. murderer. But I don't think he has the age or the heft or could pull off the beard like Kevin James does.
Yeah. Would they let him keep his native accent?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, if he didn't, then that would be bad.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think I can picture him actually being more menacing than Kevin James.
Oh, well, maybe. I read some reviews of this movie after I saw it, and I was impressed by the people that were angry. They're like, whoever showed Green Room to Kevin James needs to be fired. But hey, it wasn't his movie, as it turns out. Yeah, and so let's dig into this wonderful little treat, Becky. Which, by the way, I know people have very fond thoughts of the movie Mandy, and we will talk about it at some point. In fact, we could probably have. When I was done with this movie, I'm like, oh, maybe we need to have 1-2'd this movie, like with something else, A-B'd it, so we could have more to talk about. But I like this more than I like the movie Mandy.
Okay.
Yeah. And Nicolas Cage would have stunk this movie up.
Yeah.
The more subdued performances, the better in this movie. Because this was a sleepy little tension builder.
Yeah, except I guess towards the end, Kevin James goes off the rails a little bit.
Yeah.
But until then, everybody gives like really interior performances in ways that worked really well. Like there's really good believable tension between the father, played by Joel McHale, and his 13-year-old daughter Becky. Like they, they have had trauma in their lives. The mother figure in the situation died what looked like of cancer, so probably in a long, drawn out, horrible way, and it affected them both deeply. And now they have real trouble communicating with each other. And I thought their relationship and how both of them reacted towards one another was very believable.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I it's funny. Joel McHale, definition of a punchable face, because he's that handsome smirking guy.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody appreciates a handsome smirking guy. I don't know. It's jealousy. I'm just jealous. Did you happen to see?
I put him in the Anne Hathaway column. Like, I just assume I'm not going to like him, but I usually end up enjoying his performance.
Yeah. Yeah. Although this is our first Joel McHale movie that we've talked about. Mostly because we don't do a lot of comedies.
It's true.
Yeah. Or animated movies, because he's done a lot of voices too. Yeah, he's fine. I mean, did you see, God, what was the Burt Kreischer, the cabin one?
I did.
With Joel McHale and Kaylee Cuoco and Miss Pat.
Mm-hmm.
So tense.
Yes.
Not quite as tense as this movie, but it was probably a good place for him to use those skills. It's like, actually, he was trying to protect Kaylee Cuoco from Miss Pat the same way he was trying to protect his fiance from Becky.
Yes.
Which is kind of funny.
Yeah. At that particular time of that show, she was hammered.
Kaylee Cuoco?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. The movie opens with 13-year-old Becky Hooper, Lulu Wilson, and she's being questioned regarding an event that recently took place at her family's house. She's giving vague answers and doesn't seem to remember. And it's funny because you have a picture in your background. And I was going to say that she's actually chewing on a gummy worm. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because you had mentioned that there were like mostly sort of interior performances. And that's what made this so great. Because she was just like the perfect 13-year-old girl with like all the emotions.
Yeah, all the emotions and the devastating looks.
Yes. Yeah, and as it turns out, if you think about, I mean, this is a situation where her mother died like probably like a year ago, and she's sort of bullied at school, and she's 13, so that sucks. And Joel McHale, her father, picks her up from school sort of unexpectedly and doesn't tell her where they're going. And they end up going out to the lake house. And she assumes that they're going to sell the lake house. And she's all full of emotion. She's like, why are you taking me here? I don't want to be here. And what are you, selling it? You know, she'd never want you to sell it. And he's like, calm down, Chipmunk. We're going to keep it. Oh, great. Okay. That's fine, maybe. And then pulls up the girlfriend and her son.
He has a great line when she's so happy that they're going to keep the house. She actually hugs him and he says, oh, did you forget you hated me for a couple seconds?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the dialogue in this movie is actually pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it kind of goes off the rails toward the end.
Yeah.
But
You also missed the part where the bullying at school is interspersed with cut scenes from a prison fight involving white supremacists.
Yeah, actually, I thought that was really skillfully done, and how they had, you know, first it was just AB, and then at some point they had split screen of the two different environments and the two different characters, and I was hoping for more of that later. There was a tiny bit of it, but
yeah, and let me tell you, when you go into this movie completely cold, which I recommend, that's really disorienting.
Oh yeah. The only thing I kind of forget what the music was behind it, but luckily it wasn't some sort of happy-go-lucky music, because it was not a happy-go-lucky scene for either of them in the beginning of it.
Most of the music in this movie is like a bizarro version of like a Christopher Nolan trailer. It's just like wong, wong, wong.
I'll have to isolate that.
Please do.
That'll be our new open.
It's about time to update that.
It is time to update it, yeah. So, Jeff, Joel McHale, picks her up, takes her to the lake house, and then in the meantime, prisoner Dominic, who is played by Kevin James, he's a neo-Nazi. I thought his head tattoos were a little bit of a lick and stick kind of thing. I think they could have been a little bit better, but you know, that's again, they just looked like painted on.
They were very crisp looking.
Exactly. I think that was the problem. Although it's funny because when later he takes off his shirt, not something you would expect or necessarily want from a Kevin James movie. Although you mostly do get it actually, because fat guys without shirts are funny. Those tattoos looked actually a lot better. But maybe they just benefited from not having to be painted on every day. That was a one-day shoot. But, yeah, so...
Or maybe they're real.
Oh, God. That would be appalling. By the way, do you know what Kevin James' real name is?
No.
It's Kevin Valentine.
Oh, that's right. His brother goes by Valentine, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, now I can't think. Gary Valentine.
Yes.
So, yeah, Kevin James Valentine. He made the right choice. So, yeah, so Kevin James is this neo-Nazi guy who doesn't talk very much, which, like I said, benefits the menacingness of him. Menacingness?
You could just say menace. It's fine.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway. Yeah. Makes him scary.
It sure does.
Yeah. Bald guys with long beards are scary. Brother Jay, take note. We're happy you don't have neo-Nazi tattoos or beliefs. Yeah. Anyway, so then he also has four other guys. He engineers this whole fight.
And three other guys, right?
Yeah, three other guys. Sorry, a group of four guys. Yeah, there were actually four other guys that got in the back of the transport van. One guy did not make the journey. But yeah, so we have these other guys. Apex, who's played by Robert Malier, maybe? Malliot? He's a Canadian pro wrestler.
Oh, I was going to say he had to have been a professional wrestler.
Yes. Yes.
He was giant.
He was like 7.5 feet tall.
And they did not let him talk much.
No. And then Cole, played by Ryan McDonald, and Hammond, played by James McDougal. And I don't think we've seen them in any movies we've talked about, although, as you can imagine, Robert Mallier has been in things like 300. He played the immortal giant and a bunch of other stuff where he, you know, if they're looking for a 7.5 foot tall white guy, pretty much that's where you go.
Yeah, he's not just tall. He is huge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's something of a monster.
Yeah, he looks like he's made out of bricks.
Yes, and he is Kevin James, like, tough guy. It is unclear what the other two guys bring to the party, actually, but at least they seem devoted.
Cronyism.
Yeah, well, and Kevin James sees himself. Later you learn that, although he never had children himself, he's always seen himself as something of a father figure. Mm-hmm. Dovetails nicely with neo-Nazi, you know, the fatherland and whatnot. Anyway, back at the lake house, of course, there's that hug. You forgot to hate me until the girlfriend shows up. That's Kayla, played by Amanda Brugel. Again, I don't know. And her young son, Ty, played by Isaiah Rockliff. And Ty is super young. Doesn't say much in the movie, which also is a good thing.
Yes.
And Kayla, actually, I was impressed by that performance, too. Because, you know, especially this when they get kidnapped, pretty much, everybody, again, these interior performances, where at first it's just tension because it's uncomfortable, strained relationships, and then it's tension because there's actually legitimate, like, horror and terror and peril. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, she had one line, which if you were supposed to be sympathetic towards her, they should have edited this line out. When Becky does not react well to the girlfriend and her son showing up, and she storms off and doesn't listen to her dad, the girlfriend turns to him and says, "You let her walk all over you."
Yeah, it turns out this relationship is kind of doomed, but not for the reason that line would have indicated.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's a bit of a lack of empathy right there.
But it's I totally get it because maybe it's just Joel McHale's smirky face or his really good acting, but he is sort of treading lightly around Becky. I mean, even though he has lost his wife and he is now a single father of a 13-year-old, she has lost her mother and is a 13-year-old. So he's trying to manage things as best as he can.
Yeah, he does a good job of, again, in an interior way of really showing us how much of a tightrope he's walking between these two women in his life.
Yeah, being pulled apart. So, and they go to the lake house, and when the girlfriend shows up with the son, Becky is just not having it, so she goes off to her little fort, and the rest of the clan are kind of, sorry, that's a bad choice of words, the rest of the family, after, you know, they announce the engagement or whatever, actually there's a scene where they're in the house eating dinner or something, and it's all very tense, but, and there are two dogs, by the way. One of the dogs ends up going off to the cabin.
Dora and Diego.
Okay. And Diego is the one that's not very friendly, but is pretty much Becky's dog. And Dora is the one that's super friendly and hangs out with the rest of everybody else.
Yep.
Pays not to be a friendly dog, apparently, in this universe. So, you know, I think this it benefits from not knowing what we're getting into, so we are spoiling all the good parts of this movie. But they do a lot of, not in a way that makes it drag, but they do a little bit of lingering, like, around her little fort. And, you know, like, she keeps looking at the picture that her mom painted, or she painted? I guess her mom must have painted it, because her mom was something of a artist part-time artist, something or other. I don't know.
She took a painting or devoted more energy to painting sort of late in her illness.
Ah, okay. Yeah. And I always sort of hate when they throw, like, paintings or pictures of the characters in the movie, like, as a big plot point. because it always looks just Photoshopped in. Anyway, so, you know, her fort is where she has a bunch of, like, her own drawing stuff, like art supplies, and she's got, like, trinkets and treasure she has assembled through her living in the lake house with her mom and dad or whatever. Or visiting, I don't know. Lake house life is something I'm not really familiar with. But anyway, so hopefully, again, people with lake houses will have little treasures they have found in the country that they'll accumulate. And one of them is a key. A key with a Norse rune. It's a Valknut, or probably pronounced something else. It's like three triangles.
Right.
Yeah. The Southern Poverty Law Center says, hey, you might see this in neo-Nazi stuff, but it's actually used all over the place, so don't just assume that this is a Nazi symbol. This is just an ancient kind of rune symbol thing. So,
all right. Yeah. Well, that was a question I had.
Yeah. Unlike the swastika, which is pretty much devoted only these days to neo-Nazis, and then I guess if you're really clinging to some... was it used in Native American, but also like Eastern Indian? I don't know. Anyway.
So the next CPAC stage is going to be shaped like a Valknut?
Oh my God. Yes. Maybe so.
Okay.
It's crazy. Life is crazy. It's
just a coincidence.
Sure it is. Yeah, exactly. Anyway. So yeah, so she's got this key. Long story short, Dominic and his men, who we see them like take over the prison transport van, and then they dress up like cops, and they, I guess, get a car from this family they presumably kill rather brutally, and then they show up at the lake house. And
yeah, it was a man and two little kids.
Yes. And by the way, Apex, which, by the way, if you're 7.5 feet tall, is a good nickname, a good prison nickname. More familiar with it now that I've seen Wonder Woman than I have.
I just assumed it was his given name.
Oh, of course. Yeah, his brother, B-Pex. It turns out Dominic is there because he is looking for this key. Like, he's not there just because he's on the run and this happens to be a lake house out in the woods. He's there to get something. And that something is a key. By the way, he's also there to probably kill the whole family after they get the key.
Right.
Apex has already said, after the first kids... Like, he was reluctant to kill the first bunch of kids off screen, and he definitely doesn't want to kill any more kids. In fact, when they originally go into the house, Apex sees the fiance and her son, and tells them to run away because he doesn't want to kill them. But the other guys scoop him up and take him back in. So,
yeah, maybe he should have given them better directions, like run that way.
Well, there's that. Yes.
Not towards my buddies.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't seem like an orienteer, you know? It doesn't seem to be his specialty.
That's true.
Anyway, so they go run away, the girlfriend, fiance and son run away with Dora the dog, and the other guys stop them and kill the dog. And there's a little bit of confusion that the fiance, when they mention Becky, they convinced the two Keystone Cop Nazis that Becky's the name of the dog they killed, but Dominic soon finds out that's not true.
It's not a ruse that lasts long.
Actually, none of the plot points last long in this thing. I mean, this thing clips along. I don't remember exactly how long it was, but it's funny because I had questions at the end of it. I mean, this movie actually made me curious to see if the whole thing was a setup for Becky 2, which I think they could do pretty easily, but maybe not successfully. I like the fact that a lot of this movie goes unexplained. Like, here's a spoiler, everybody. Nobody knows what the key goes to.
It's true.
Yeah, ever. You never find out what the key's all about. And yet, it becomes very important to the story for a reason I'll tell you in just a second. So anyway... There's a fire pit. There's some torture. There's some...
This movie start to finish is 93 minutes, by the way.
Beautiful. Wonderful.
Perfect.
Length. Exactly. So blah, blah, blah. They know Becky's in the woods. Becky, by the way, has snuck back to the main house and tried to grab her phone, but couldn't. So instead grabbed a walkie-talkie. And so she transmits to the other walkie-talkie some threats. And for a second I was thinking, oh, this is going to be one of those like Anna or one of those movies where it turns out, you know, she is a kit girl or something, or hit girl. Was that?
Yes. Okay. Hit girl.
Hit girl. Yeah. But she is not, which is nice.
I thought at one point this was going to turn into, like a really gory, bloody version of Home Alone.
This kind of was a Home Alone sort of movie. Yeah. I mean, for a bit.
Yeah, just one scene, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But it was so masterfully done. Oh, we're going to talk about it in great detail. So, trigger warning, there's some viscera we're going to talk about here in a second. Yeah, so we had this little cat and mouse game played with Becky in the woods and Dominic, who is calling her bluff over the radio and ends up taking Dad out to the fire pit and torturing Dad. And hopes that Dad will, that she'll come, like, turn herself in, give him the key, and everybody goes away happy. Dominic presents Jeff with the walkie-talkie to tell her. And he says, run! At which point Dominic kills Dad. That leaves a lot. I mean, at this point, Becky is now, okay, I'm kind of suddenly out of people I care about in the house. So
yeah, and even that one was pretty iffy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't know. Well, and that's why I like the, it turns out the girlfriend, Kayla, sorry, fiance Kayla, she does have a great line later when, after Kevin James gets a little taste of how the brutality that, that Becky is capable of.
Yeah.
She's like, look, you know, she's a 13-year-old girl who is who you've just killed her, but her father and her dad, and she is pissed off and angry.
Yeah, I forget her exact words.
Yeah, they were better than that for sure.
She's willful and angry, and you killed her only living relative. Something
yes.
like that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and so it's a lot of like, oh, you're gonna kill me and my son. That's already, I already know that's going to happen. But yeah, you've bitten off more than you can chew with Becky. So fuck you. It's kind of nice. Anyway, but he already knows this at that point in the conversation because we're slipping back in time a little bit. Becky actually says she'll give him the key. And again, this is where Jeff breaks free, tries to find her. Dominic shoots him. And this is the first time where actually Becky gets caught. Like the bad guys yep. catch her and like knock the wind out of her pretty badly. But this first time, she actually uses the key to pluck out one of Dominic's eyes in a scene that is, I know why you, I mean, I laugh too, because If she had just stabbed the key into his eye and he lost his eye and all you saw was like blood and then later he showed up with the patch over his eye, you'd mm-hmm. be like, oh, that's gross. But Dad, maybe Jason, he actually goes back to the cabin and has to tell his cohort or whatever to cut the optical nerve so they get rid of the eye completely. And then he pulls out these little, like, children's scissors with the rounded tips and tries to cut them off.
Yeah, it's like cutting through, like, a really hard piece of gristle. It's not happening.
Yes, yes. So
yeah, but yeah, so yeah. When he caught her, she stabbed him in the eye with the key, and you don't really see what happens. But when he goes back and he asks his buddy, like, how it looks, and the guy gives him like the dad face when he saw your sunburn on the ferry. And it's mangled, man.
Yeah, he's like it's gone.
Yeah, and then you see the eye, yeah, the eye is actually like hanging yes. out.
And again, this is a quiet Kevin James, so he's just like, okay, let's just take care of it. And he ends up taking a butcher knife and chopping his own optical nerve off, throwing his eye in the sink.
And even that wasn't very easy.
No.
It was not a quick thing.
Yes. So it was, yeah. So I love that part, even though it'd be gruesome.
Yeah. But it made me question, like, he didn't cut it off flush. Like, there is still some of the,
oh yeah,
the sinewy nerve hanging out. Like, did he have to shove it back in so that he could wrap up his eye?
Good question. Yeah. They didn't linger on that part of it.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, so now, of course, Dominic is pissed off. Becky drawn first blood.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Did you cut your daughter's umbilical cord?
I did, yes.
Yeah. That didn't make you think of it?
You know what? Until you just mentioned it, it didn't. But yeah, that turned out to be way tougher than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was some serious stuff. Yeah. Yep.
Birth. It's not just traumatic for the moms.
No. Yeah. We're going to start a support group.
Yeah. Yeah. We totally should do that.
Yeah.
Sure. We'd get lots of support.
Yes. Father survivors of the birth experience.
Mm-hmm. We had it rough.
We did. Oh, man. No, we had a C-section. God, I didn't have to see one bit. I held my wife's hand and without messing up her hair. And then I cut an umbilical cord, and I saw nothing behind that curtain. It's great.
Man, look at you. Living the dream.
Oh, well, yeah. I didn't push my luck, right? We only had one. Yeah, okay. So then he cuts off his dangling eye, blah, blah, blah. They send Cole and Hammond out to retrieve the key. By the way, in the very beginning of it, where she's like, somebody is asking her, the cops or whatever, or a counselor, turns out it's one of each, is talking to her about what had happened that we're going to be presented with this whole movie. She mentions a guy in a stupid orange camouflage shirt or sweater or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's Cole, who finds Becky in the fort thing and tries to negotiate. But this is where she goes full Rambo and improvises a lot of weapons.
Yeah, it was a little far-fetched, but not so far-fetched it took me out of the movie.
Yeah, well, again, once the tension is broken with the dangling eye bit that goes on and on and on and on, I thought, okay, well, we're in for some interesting stuff. But I like the fact that it didn't, again, she's not Hit Girl. She takes care of Cole, but you know, this is all new to her. She's not particularly skilled at any of this.
Yeah. I mean, she is primarily successful because, she is committed to doing an extraordinary amount of violence in a way that even the people who that violence is being perpetrated on cannot believe is coming from a 13-year-old girl.
Oh no. Yes,
they underestimate her. It's not like she's like knocking him out with one punch. It's that she's willing to stab him 80 times.
Yes. With colored pencils.
And a broken ruler.
Exactly. And then, now I'm sure you were probably 6-7 years old when you saw I Spit on Your Grave. But
sounds right.
Yeah. Did you recognize the outboard motor homage?
I did not remember that from I Spit on Your Grave.
Yeah. No, that's, I think, I think that's the there's a couple of highlights is a strong term, but gory moments and getting hit with the churned up, sliced up by a propeller is one of them. So, makes for a lot of blood. So, she's now in a very Home Alone kind of situation. Now, killed two of the four bad guys. Unfortunately, Apex shows up, and
We skipped right past the great part of the Home Alone scene, where she rigs up the tripwire.
Yes.
So that the guy will fall on the board with the nails sticking up. Which is great because it's it's I'm sure it was horrific for him, but it's not the type of injury that would debilitate him. So she certainly had to follow it up.
Oh yeah, yeah, was smacking him many times with a board with nails out of it, and then mm-hmm. the boat motor. Yeah, the prop or whatever. Anyway, so yeah, so then Apex shows up and knocks the dog out, but also knocks the wind out of Becky. I mean, it's impressive, and it was like a harrowing kind of scene. But yeah, he's going to
he picked her up like what by the it was either by the throat or by the face, right? Yeah.
And slams just her down,
slammed her to the ground, and then punched her in the stomach.
Yeah, like, solar plexus that punch or something. Was
just rude.
Yeah, yeah. But yes, but she can't catch her breath, so she's mm-hmm. she is definitely going to die if Apex wants her to. But again, he doesn't want to kill any more kids. So in his caveman way, he tells her, I don't want to kill kids, but you need to run.
And this is another moment that I liked. Like, she has just brutally, horrifically murdered two dudes after stabbing a third one in the eyeball.
Yes.
And at this moment when she can't breathe and she's scared, she's still 13, so she just like starts crying.
Yeah, that's the thing is during underselling all the performance, because she's mm-hmm. again, she doesn't just turn into Rambo, she has all the emotions all along the way.
Yeah,
like every bit of this, she is turned scared or, you know, helpless or, you know, angry or whatever. So it's great. She deserves an award. I'm not sure what award she would get from this, but
sometimes she's just a fucking weirdo, like when she draws the happy face on the window.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cruising toward the end here, Becky goes back to the house at this point. Apex, I don't know, did he say that he got her? Or no, he said that she got away or something. Oh, he disappears. He runs off too. Sorry.
So he already had the chat with Dominic where Dominic basically told him to sack up and get his head in the game.
Oh yes, because he
shoot him.
Exactly. He tells Apex to shoot him in the chest because he has spent like 10 years or 5 years or whatever in jail plotting every single hour of every single day about the plan. And, he was trying to figure out all the weak links, but he never thought that Apex would be the link that would break the whole chain or whatever. You know, he's a good dad. Dominic is, he knows all the tricks. Anyway, so yeah. So yeah, Dominic says, I am running, or sorry. Apex tells Becky, I am running away. You need to run away also. Mm-hmm. Dominic is back at home with Kayla and Ty, the little boy. And this is where we have the scene where Kayla is. And maybe this is part of his distracting Dominic so he doesn't see that Becky's back in the window or whatever. Yep. But she's like, yeah, we're going to die. But you fucked up, buddy. Yeah, so we have, and then we have the second time in this movie where Becky gets the crap slammed out of her during a little chase scene, Dominic grabs her and slams her on the ground and incapacitates her briefly. But then she is saved by Apex. I guess I should have seen coming. What I did not see coming, though, was her running to the garage and starting the four-wheeler that has the lawnmower attachment to it.
Yep.
And running over Dominic's head, like in a trauma level of gore.
Yes, absolutely. And similar with the boat motor, it was nice and gory. I don't think that's what would really happen under those circumstances.
No, I don't think so either.
But it was, it was effective and keeping in the spirit of the movie.
Yeah, and Dominic's not coming back for the sequel.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, so basically Kayla and Ty and during this whole thing, basically in the the last fight between Dominic and Becky. Becky slams Kayla's car into a tree. And or was it her dad's car? I don't know. But basically, OnStar calls the police for them, which is nice. Pretty nice.
Yep.
I've been called by OnStar. I've been called by people who accidentally touch their rearview mirror in their car. Not really, because they have a service like that. And you have to yell at them in their car. Anyway. So, yeah. So, they all are spent. Because, by the way, Kayla gets shot in the thigh. So she is pretty seriously injured. Likely not fatally, but pretty seriously injured. Ty comes out like a champ. He's not injured at all.
Also after Becky ran over Dominic, Apex is trying to talk to her and she just grabs the gun and shoots him in the head.
Yes. Which is awesome.
Yeah. He's like trying to have a heart to heart about how, killing somebody will affect her, and he doesn't really get to finish his thought.
Exactly. Because the next thing that ran through his head was a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, you hear the sirens and you see the police lights, and then you kind of flash back to, or forward or whatever, to her, Becky, getting interviewed. And she's just kind of like, doesn't remember it much. And she's all like, I don't know what happened. I was, you know. And there's that little glint in her eye like, oh, yeah, I'm a badass. Or, oh, yeah, I am irrevocably. Anyway, I'm permanently damaged by this and will become a serial killer.
Yeah, and she's still chewing on those gummy worms that she stole from the convenience store.
Exactly. But again, in a very, I don't know, like, the attitude with which she chewed the gummy worms was great. So, and at the end, like I said, I didn't know. I was curious what was going to happen with Becky and the rest of the thing. I was curious what did the key unlock? Does it matter? Turns out it doesn't. And anything that answered that question would probably be disappointment.
Yep.
Which is why Becky 2, which will inevitably come out, and I hope they make a ton of money, but it can't be satisfying. Unless by the time Becky 2 comes out, she's like 25, and you see that she's got like a cigar box or a junk drawer that's just full of weird Nazi keys. She's done some shit in the last bunch of years.
I would watch a movie where she became a Nazi hunter.
Yeah. Do a better job than Al Pacino.
Yeah?
I don't know. I haven't seen them.
I haven't either.
Anyway.
Although, did you ever see X-Men First Class?
I did not. I own it, but I have not seen it.
So it's kind of the story of how very early in the timeline, how Professor X and Magneto kind of became friends before they were enemies. And so it shows a little bit of the history of Magneto, about how he grew up for part of his childhood in a concentration camp. Hmm. And then it cuts to when he's a fully powered mutant, but young guy. And it's almost like a Inglourious Bastard scene. He's just like at a bar, and it turns out he's hunting down Nazis.
Ah.
And it's a really cool scene. And it made me think, I would totally watch Michael Fassbender as Magneto just hunting Nazis down for an entire movie.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
You know what? It would be dangerous, but hunting Nazis would be fun and rewarding. Like, you'd really get a good charge out of catching a Nazi.
It's like a villain pretty much everybody can agree on.
Yeah. Yeah. Strange, they have washed up on our shores a lot lately, but I guess they've always been there.
By shores, did you mean the White House?
I guess the White House too. Yeah, that's true. Yes, yeah, yeah. They went through the front door of the White House for sure. Hey, anyway, yeah, but you know what? I think I can completely speak for the Not in a Creepy Way brand, and that we are anti-Nazi. And always will be. Anyway, so thoughts about Becky? Was it worth it?
Oh, it was definitely worth it. I mean, it's 93 minutes.
Yeah.
That includes actually kind of fun credits.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. This movie had a lot of style in the opening and the ending. And it had some style in the beginning. I mean, I will watch other movies by these guys because they did a good job with this. And this is definitely an indie movie. It does not make me necessarily want to go back and look at all of the Kevin James catalog. But, you know, again, he's, King and Queens is funny. And he's, you know, he's friends with Adam Sandler. So he could he's in a lot of Adam Sandler like movies. And that's cool.
It did. The movie did leave me feeling like a little Seinfeldian. I was like, what is the deal with Becky? Like, seriously, what is her deal? I mean, I get the disaffected youth thing, but they spent, like, for a 93-minute movie, they spent a significant amount of time with her just staring at a family in the convenience store. Like, they're all wearing the family reunion shirts.
Yes.
And I did not understand what that was about or what information I was supposed to glean from her reaction to that, to the family reunion. Or
not the lack
people
of
people wearing the t-shirts.
Not that it's just her and her dad and her mom's dead.
I guess, but couldn't you look at any family
right.
unit
yeah.
that way?
Yeah, you're right.
It's just weird. I don't know.
Maybe they ran into a actual family reunion and used those as extras. I mean, that's some like guerrilla filmmaking kind of stuff.
That would be funny.
Did you ever see the movie Drawing Flies? The Kevin Nope. Smith movie?
Nope.
It's actually, it's the movie itself. I think it's short. I think it's like maybe 80 minutes or something. But it was definitely like non-union. In fact, like Joey Lauren Adams doesn't use her own name because it would violate SAG rules or something. It's Jason Lee is hunting for a Bigfoot. But again, it's right in there, that whole Kevin Smith chasing Amy time period. And watching the movie itself is fine. I mean, it's like a C-minus movie. But I watched it and then immediately watched it again with the commentary. And the commentary mm-hmm. is all the principal actors, except for like one of the main guys who I guess maybe he was in film school time where they knew him from film school and he had he's now a construction worker or something, or maybe works for a construction company or something. And so they just took shots at him the entire movie. There's one point where they're like, oh, yeah, he had a boner. And so he was trying to hide it from the camera and blah, blah, blah. But they also talked a lot about how they shot a bunch of stuff without getting any permits, and they had to do it fast. Like, go in, shoot it. Like, they went into, like, a convenience store, asked the people of the convenience store, hey, can we shoot for, like, an hour or so here? It would be really cool. We're just these, like, filmmakers who are poor or whatever. And they're like, sure, you know. But had anybody caught wind of it, they would have been fined or whatever for not getting the proper permits. They're also in Canada, so a lot of that was, like, trying to skip out on like American laws for that too. Although I'm sure Canada has the same sort of laws about that. Some places are very strict about where you can film and where you can't. Like New York City is super permit heavy. I'm sure all big cities are. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know nothing about nothing. The commentary is hilarious because, and I'm sure they're all getting high or whatever as they're doing the commentary. But yeah, it was very interesting. So yeah, so Becky, so I don't know. I thought this was a perfectly good use of my 93 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed the fact that I knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
Going into it.
Sweet. So, are we on to housekeeping?
I think we better be.
I'm sure I had some stuff to talk about. I'm watching the second of two Alfred Hitchcock movies that are letting me down. The first one was Torn Curtain with... But Paul Newman and Julie Andrews, maybe? Big snooze fest. And the one I'm watching now is Topaz with John Carradine. And I don't know, it's a bunch of actors who I can recognize, but no big stars that I can name off the top of my head. They're both kind of snoozy. I got spoiled with things, you know, even if I had to, like I hated Jimmy Stewart in Vertigo, but Vertigo is really a taut kind of movie. Psycho is a great, like, taut movie. Long.
Even Rope.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Watch. Oh, I watched the documentary this morning on three-part documentary on Netflix, I think, Murder Among the Mormons.
Oh, how was it? That just came out, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to change your life, and it's not going to it's not like an attack on the Mormon church at all. It's basically this bombing or a series of bombings that involve some dealers in Mormon like antique documents in Salt Lake City in 1985. So, yeah, that's worth watching for sure. Let's see. Oh, we bought a love seat because our living room was not really very good for living. So we bought a love seat and a recliner, but the recliner isn't in yet until like the end of the month, probably. But the love seat got delivered on Monday. And it's a powered love seat, so both sides recline, and it's got like four cup holders and all this stuff. You know, it's whatever.
Footrests that pop out.
Oh, everything. It reclines like all the way. I think almost into like a bed. But it's got independent headrest adjustments and stuff. So you know, whatever. Again, it's not top of the line furniture. It's from Bailey's Furniture. But Monday we got it delivered. Tuesday afternoon, Kelly texted me at work saying, "Hey, the left side doesn't work."
Oh no.
I'm like, are you kidding? And then it turns out our salesman was named Phil Collins. Nice black guy, so didn't look at no resemblance, probably not related. But I was like, "Oh, Phil Collins is gonna hear it in the air tonight." Which made me happy to see that, but that was the only happy part of it. But we paid for the fucking come to my house and fix it, even though 2 days in, I would be calling them anyway, no matter where I bought it from. And although we had tried to unplug and replug in because like each side has its, there's like one big control, like motor or whatever, or center or something that plugs into the wall. But then there's two separate motors for each side of the thing. And each of those have little coiled plugs that go in there. And so I thought I unplugged everything, unplugged it back in, but when the technician came out on Thursday morning, he just unplugged everything, unplugged it back in, and it worked fine. So either that's a good sign, or it's going to happen again, which will piss me off.
Mm-hmm.
But we're as a family of circumference, we're probably going to be hard on the furniture anyway, especially since it all is motorized and stuff, and there's no manual aspect of any of it. So like, you can't just grab a lever or something. And if the power goes out, you're stuck wherever you are. But, I don't know.
Yeah. We are also hard on furniture. We live in furniture. We don't buy it to keep it nice.
It's, exactly. Well, and, like, yeah.
We have leather furniture. It's not our primary. Like, we have a leather couch and a couple leather chairs. And it's not in our, like, primary living room. But I was looking at it the other day. I was like, I knew better. Like, leather furniture and cats don't go well together.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing, is that I've already divorced myself like 3 days, 4 days into it. Like, oh, yeah, the cats are going to claw the furniture. The dog is going to grab a bone or toy or something and whatever. Probably the dog and the cats will puncture. It's not leather, but it's like this supposed to be like fairly sturdy, almost leather looking kind of stuff. I mean, not like Naga hide or plasticky stuff, but it's supposed to be fairly durable. But yeah, I mean, pets, who knows? Oh, well. But it wasn't $1 million either, so that was fine. I mean, it was enough to be swearing about Phil Collins.
I bet 2 days in, that's not cool.
No. The amount of times I was like, "Urgh!" Do, 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 do. Yeah. It's the only thing that made me happy. And it made me far too happy.
No, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, so what's up with you?
I got my first shot yesterday.
Excellent. How are you feeling?
Feeling okay. My arm's a little sore, but...
Good.
I'm super tired. I don't know if that's from the shot or just because work is stressful and I don't sleep. Who knows?
Yeah, you'll never know, as it turns out.
Yeah, never. I'm always tired. But yeah, so far so good. Got the second one scheduled. So yeah, I'm pretty happy about it. What else? I watched Tenet.
Oh, and?
I think we're all going to have to watch it and talk about it to finish up our Christopher Nolan's
masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna warn both of you. I think we have to commit to watching it twice before we talk about it.
Okay.
I got it on Netflix. Got the actual disc, Blu-ray disc from Netflix, and watched it. And I really like to turn those discs around. I really like to try and get my value out of my Netflix disc subscription. But after I finished Tenet, I decided I'm going to keep this. I'm going to take it up to the lake house because I need to watch it again, maybe more than one time. It is a lot of movies describe themselves as mind bending, but the creativity on display in Tenet is really something I have not seen regularly. Just the concepts and the execution. I'm not sure it all ties together the way it feels like after one watch, which is why I want to go back and watch a second time. But we should definitely do it. We should get it on the schedule and commit to that. So that was good. What else? Watch Boss Level on Hulu. Not great, but pretty fun. I mean, it's a time loopy action movie, so it's kind of hard to go wrong as long as there's some good fun scenes in it, and there are. So, and Frank Grillo is always kind of fun. He's a good B movie action guy. So that worked. That's what I've been watching lately. Yeah, we're going to be chilling out at the lake house for hopefully all of spring break. I've got the time off of work, but I also have a jury duty notice that I have to start calling in for on Sunday. So if my number is actually called, which I can't imagine because they're not even doing jury trials yet, I'll probably have to go back, leave the family here. But yeah, head back into Anchorage to complete my civic duty. Which I don't know. I guess I'd be okay with. I served on a jury once before and it was fine. Except for being threatened by the guy we convicted afterwards. But other than that, it's should be all good. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay.